Our next speaker for this evening is our AA speaker from L.A. I just met him a while ago. He says he's very outspoken. Him and I have something in common then. So I'd like to introduce to you at this time Serenity Sam.
Is that judge still here? Okay, remember what you hear here stays here. In any case, good evening. My name is Sam, and I'm an alcoholic. And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I maintain my sobriety. I kept this damn tie on as long as I could, but I can't go no further with it. I didn't tell him I was outspoken. I said I was plain-spoken, I think. But I may be outspoken, too. I'm a member of the Venice group of Alcoholics Anonymous. If any of you know where Venice is, it's not Beverly Hills, by any means. Somebody came to our group years ago and gave us a nickname, and it's kind of stuck with us. The guy said, when he walked in the room and saw the group, he said, "Jesus, where the debris meets the sea." And it's kind of that way. We've gone through periods there where we fought the big book. We fought New York. We fought everything we could. And fortunately, there are a few survivors of that group. They got back to this damn thing the way it was written. And I've been lucky enough to have gone through many phases of sobriety. The judge there was kind of a gas. He reminded me of some things that happened to me a few years ago. I went through a rebellious period, and after that I had a spiritual awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous, the likes of which I don't ever care to have happen to me again. I overshot the field and became a religious fanatic. And I was a menace in meetings. I carried a big book under one arm and a Bible under the other. And that's a disaster coming through the door. And I belonged to an AA club there in Los Angeles. And I was so wild that to get rid of me, they'd send me out on fake 12-step calls. So I'd go. I was a fanatic, you know. I'd be going through the door, and Sully'd always say to me, "Don't you come back here without him." And I'd say, "I'll get that bastard. Don't you worry about it. I'll get him." And the point I'm trying to get across is that, well, the best way I can describe it is in Los Angeles County today, to the best of my knowledge, there are eight people who are members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are sober and don't know they ain't supposed to be here. I found them. And he always sent me to a bar or a vacant lot. And you can always find a drunk at either one of those two places. And I'm picking up people at bus stop benches and in bars. And I always figured, because they were so reluctant, you know, that they'd drank a little after they'd called and changed their mind and didn't want to go. So I brought these poor reluctant fools into an AA meeting, and the point of all this is something happened to them while they were there, and they're still sober today, not because of what I did. Obviously, it was all a mistake, but you can't tell somebody with 7-8 years of sobriety that it's all wrong. You know, you ain't supposed to be here. They found something that they needed and maybe didn't realize that they did. And I'm grateful, I guess, today for some of those experiences. I've been reluctant in recent times to even talk about it because I sure was one hell of a mess. that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had was an original edition, of course. I had to get one of them, and I put a bunch of fake autographs in it. You know, Bill Wilson, Sister Ignatia, all them people. Hell, I put them right in there. And I come pretty damn close to autographing that Bible, too. It was, why the hell not? There's a place down in Texas, you know, Del Rio, Texas. They advertise on the radio autographed pictures of Jesus Christ for a dollar in beautiful color. All you have to do is send in for them. I figure, what the hell, if they can do that, I'm about ready to, too. I was so damn spiritual, it was sickening. And but before that, I went the opposite direction. I belonged to that, we call it the resentment group, because we hated everything and everybody. And central office in Los Angeles wouldn't let us list that name in the directory. So we just said, well, you know, the hell with you, who needs you, we'll go our own way. And so we decided to rewrite everything, and we did. Bunch of hippies is what it was. I was much younger then. I don't want to be known as the world's oldest living hippie, which to some extent I guess I still am. We were known as beatniks in those days. I was 29 years old, and we were so hip, we almost didn't make it. We rewrote the Serenity Prayer to, God grant me the courage to change the things I cannot accept. I guess there's a little identification there. We rewrote chapter 5 to, I can't even remember some of those. They were pretty bad. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and wonderful. No human power could have believed our alcoholism. And we set it to music. This was a very in thing, a hip thing with the beats in those days to read poetry to background music, and we had a few musicians, alleged musicians, in our group. We had a lot of other things, too. The reason this group started was at a couple of AA clubhouses in Los Angeles. There were a lot of pillheads, a lot of junkies, a lot of people who smoked non-habit-forming weed, and took a lot of non-habit-forming pills that they were, of course, addicted to. And we became so obnoxious around the place there that they put up little signs. No pill talk, no junkies, you know, that sort of thing. Well, we all said the same thing, screw you. And went on and started our own little resentment group and then did all this rewriting. But that group boiled down to another disaster. The junkies, of course, were not alcoholics, so they drank. And the pillheads and the alcoholics smoked weed, because, after all, it's not mentioned in the big book, and everybody knows it's non-habit-forming. And, of course, we all became addicted to these other things that we were not addicted to, and our meetings were something else. And, one of our meetings, we passed the basket and it went right out the back door. That's why the survivors of that damn group got back to this tired blue book over here the way it's written. Not with all that rewrite and do it the easier, softer way. I also had a chance about this time in my sobriety, which was before I was a year old, to be involved in an experiment with LSD at UCLA. The word got around us, of course. We hear all the good things, you know. We don't need to read newspapers. We pick up on all these in things, and we heard that they wanted to experiment on alcoholics. This was to be an alleged cure for alcoholism. Besides which, you got spiritual as all hell. Once you took it, you found God right away. Well, I'm looking for the easier, softer way. Who isn't? And I was going to go up there, and I did, with a bunch of people. And one of the pieces of paper that I had to sign says, I agreed to be strapped down if I became violent. And I thought, that ain't spiritual or nothing else. I'm getting the hell out of here. And so I cut out. Some of the people went up there with stayed. Now, there were 100 alcoholics, the majority of which, I believe, were members of Alcoholics Anonymous who tried that. This was in 1957, summer of 1957. Of the ones that I know, the group of 10 that I went up there with, within a year and a half, two had killed themselves. And out of the 100, it was a series of five articles that the doctor wrote after the experiment was over with. They were in the Los Angeles Times. His closing line was the thing that sold me, or made me inside be grateful that I didn't take the damn stuff. The closing line went like this: and not one of them remained sober. You know, big time cure. Well, all right. I don't like those odds. I want the best odds I can get. And I have found it as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I come from a family of alcoholics. The majority of my family should be right here in meetings like this. However, they're not. Most of them are in penitentiaries or walking the streets, doing things like that, and robbing people's homes at night. And while they're at meetings, I suppose. Shouldn't have said that. I don't feel so good myself now. I live in Venice, and what goes on there isn't to be believed. One of my aunts is still out there hustling on the streets. I get my powers of rationalization from that side of the family. She still thinks she's 29 years old, and she ain't. A year ago last Thanksgiving, she's always in jail at Thanksgiving, always. She got arrested for hustling and drunk, and she was 72 years old at the time, baby. Now, that's a lot of rationalization. She ain't turning too many tricks at that age, you know that, and I know. She's hustling a college town, and hell, she's had everything lifted there is to be lifted, but by God, she's, you know, 73 years old now, and that's it. She might as well quit beating around the bush. But this is the way a lot of my family operate. Our family reunions have been held in penitentiaries. My father used to tell me years ago, you know, before he even went to school, he says, hell, you've been in more jails now than most people have been in grocery stores. I knew all the visiting rooms and jails around. Hell, I never been to Chicago in my whole life, and I was born 200 miles from there, but I can sure as hell tell you where the state penitentiaries are around there. I know them and how to get to them. And still got a lot of relatives in there. Because, you see, they drink, most of them. They're all burglars and thieves and like that. None of them ever worked, with the exception of my father. He sobered up a few times. He went to AA and sobered up for a while and got jobs and things. My father and I had a terrible relationship. We always hated each other. Even after we were both sober, you know, AA didn't improve our relationship at all. My father carries a gun, for one thing. And besides which, I've done a lot of things that just, well, he don't know about. Because I know it tells you in there you got to make amends, and that sort of thing. And direct amends, they tell you that. But damn it, years ago, I found one of these high finance type of hippies, so we filled out income tax papers. And I got money back 3 years in a row, and hell, I never worked in my life. And I always used my father's name, so they arrested him for it. My father, being a drunk, he thought he'd done it, so Every time my father went to court, he just pled guilty. So, you know, he had to do a little time over that. And I'm not quite sure when that amend will ever be made. But my father, believe it or not, after a couple of slips in Alcoholics Anonymous, stayed sober. And this was what brought me here, because I see all the rest of my family, and I looked up to most of them. I wanted to go into the family business, stealing, but I didn't want to get caught. So I promised myself I was never going to drink. It didn't work out worth a damn. I went to jail when I was 14. I was back in front of a judge when I was 18. And when I went to jail, it was the same old thing. I'd never been out on bail or bond or anything like that. My family always said the same thing, let him rot. And none of them had any money anyway. Hell, you know, they ain't going to waste it on me. I'm the type that ran, you know, when in doubt, cut out. And what I usually did. And so I go to jail at 18, waiting on trial, had 9 counts against me, guilty of every damn one of them. And they throw me in the county jail. My Uncle Bill's in there doing 90 for drunk and disorderly. My Aunt Gussie's around the corner in the woman's jail. She's doing 90 for drunk and disorderly, running down the street with no clothes on, trying to knife Uncle Bill. And they throw me in to wait on trial. My father shows up the first visiting day, and he's drunk, so they arrest him in the visiting room. And we're all in this damn jail together. Now, every time I ever went to jail, that's the way it was. Family reunion, inside or outside or whatever. And I had not touched a drop of booze at the age of 18. And yet there I was in jail. Well, by the time I got out of that mess, which was by the time I was 20 years old, just about 21, I started to drink. And so I found a lot of other things. I never specialized. I know people that say, you know, this was their drink and that sort of thing, or junkies. Hell, I never specialized. I took anything I'd get my hands on that might do the job. And so being a low life, I became addicted to just common, ordinary things like Alka-Seltzer and Bromo-Seltzer and aspirin tablets, Midol tablets, anything that'll do the job. And if you ain't tried it, don't knock it. They might work. They work for me on a temporary basis. If you're desperate enough, you'll take anything. It was just like when I was in jail. You can do a lot of things in there to get high, you know. Be surprised what you can use, just common, ordinary things. Well, hell, I became addicted to these damn things. I was a hell of a mess. I chewed Alka-Seltzer and Roma-Seltzer for almost 2 years. I had to carry it with me all the time. I damn near got arrested once. That's foaming at the mouth on the bug. So you can see, I was never an adult. I was 21 years old, but didn't mean a damn thing. I was just physically an alleged adult, which reminds me, what's that damn clock? Have you got a watch I can borrow, since you're sitting behind me? I ain't used to watches, ain't got one. Never wanted one. Somebody always steal it. The group I ran with, the only one that ever had a watch in the bunch I ran around with, it only had a minute hand on it. And that way nobody would steal it. And we didn't care what time it was anyway. I used to ask him what time it was, and he'd say a quarter after something. And this clown's still at it. I went to see him not too long ago, and I get there, and I'm ringing the doorbell, knocking on the door, and he says, "You're here on the wrong day." I says, "Damn it, I am not. You're drinking, and I'm sober. I know when I'm supposed to be here." And he says, "Come here, I'll show you." And he wrote it down on the calendar. I looked at it, and the calendar's 2 years old. That's the reason. You know, he's still operating the same way. But if you people or anybody here drank like I did or used like I did, we didn't give a damn what day it was. Hell, let alone need a watch for the hour. Christ, we didn't care whether it was daylight or dark or what the hell was going on. If you're loaded, that's all that matters. I had to be loaded all the time. And so I became addicted to anything I could get my hands on. And I found drugs before I was 22 years old, and I dug them. And so it took me only till I was 29 to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to look for a way out. I looked for other ways out before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried a lot of far-out religions. I tried a lot of so-called normal religions. I went to all kinds, trying to find some answers and never finding it. And the only answer I ever found was in that bottle and in those prescriptions, and above all that non-habit-forming weed, because I don't know what weed did to you that have tried it or used it, but it made me happier than hell. I smiled all the time. Everything was just fine when I was smoking weed. My sponsor told me that I had an Al-Anon smile 5 years before I got here. Everything was just fine. Better not say that too loud. I ain't close to a door. I've been waylaid by Al-Anon. I don't know about you. They're dangerous, you know. They read that book and other books, and they talk about us at their meetings. Besides which, they know us for what we are. I found that out at a meeting I was at during my more religious period. I was bragging to an Al-Anon broad about the big spiritual awakening I had and how wonderful it was. And she looks me right in the eye and says, "The trouble with some of you bastards that have these spiritual awakenings is you go back to sleep." So watch what you say about Al-Anon. They travel armed. In any case, I wander around once in a while and try to see some of these old friends of mine, not too often. Just once in a while, I want to see them and not to look down on them, not to feel better than they are, anything like that. But I got to kind of know inside me where it came from. And inside me, I know when I see people like that, or other drunks too, that are still practicing, that I got to be a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to tell people that. I have to know it inside, because it doesn't do me any good to mouth words. I've done a lot of whitewashing of the pump. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wore a white shirt and a tie to every damn meeting I went to. And I went to nothing but the Brentwood, Beverly Hills, Hollywood, Malibu-type meetings, and I let those people know just how much of a big wheel I was, you know, and how well-adjusted I was, and my high IQ. And finally, they began to wonder what the hell I was doing there if I was that well-adjusted. And in those days, I was traveling as a musician, and being a big-time musician, I got myself two agents. One wasn't enough. And this was my first moment of truth in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them got me a job playing piano in a bar in Santa Monica, and I couldn't show up because I can't play the piano. I can't play any musical instrument at all. And that's how I found out about, you know, that demands rigorous honesty stuff they got in Chapter 5. One of my sponsors had given me a big book, and he had underlined a lot of that stuff. I just tore those pages out, you know. That wasn't for me. After all, I'm 29. I'm too young to be an alcoholic, for one thing. I just have a slight problem with the bottle. I didn't mention those other things. I was sober 10 days at the time, and when my moment of truth came, the first one in many years. And so I did the only thing I knew: when in doubt, drink, and when in doubt, run. And I did both. And, of course, I dropped some of those non-habit-forming pills and smoked some of that non-habit-forming weed again. Booze right in on top of it. That slip lasted 1 week. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous January the 11th, 1957. I had been sober and clean since that time. And only because someplace deep inside me there was enough want and enough willingness to finally try to do what that damn book said, at least a little bit, at least enough to stay clean and dry for one day. And on some days, all I got is don't drink. I'm not so well adjusted yet. I pulled a boo-boo this week, or last week, that kind of shows me up. Maybe I shouldn't have told you how long I've been sober. A man called me in the business that I'm in. He owns a couple of television programs, and he wanted me to come to work for him, or come for an interview, see if he would hire me. And I thought it was a 12-step call. And I was asking if he was drinking. And then I tried to get him to go to a meeting. And it was kind of a fiasco there for a little bit. Finally, he just told me bluntly, "It's none of your damn business." Then he began to laugh, and he decided I was a big put-on, and that I was just funnier than all hell, which just suited me fine, because this is what he's hiring me for. This is what I do for an alleged living. I write comedy. And this is what he wanted me to do, and I'm feeding him straight lines, and he don't know it. I ain't about to tell him either, because that's how I got the job. I go in for that interview, and he's laughing, you know, coming on. I guess, just fine, just keep laughing, baby. Feed you some more of them straight lines. And I can talk about things like that today because I'm not ashamed of them. I'm a long ways from being a well-adjusted person. However, I am a member of the human race, and I know it. And this is what I want to be. And I'm a member of the human race today because I'm basically a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to give the credit where it's due, you know. And on some days, when it gets rough and my higher power's out of town, and I don't know where yours goes, but mine hides from me. And we just don't have no contact at all. And all I got going for me is don't drink. But it's enough. It's enough to get me through the day. And there's a lot of times when I'm really at odds with my higher power. And I'm suicidal. I really want to get out of this world. I read a lot of Huxley years ago, among other people. Huxley says in one of his books that this is the hell of some other planet. And I was just loaded enough to believe it, you know, at the time. Why not? Hell, subscribe to that belief. I subscribe to a lot of beliefs at one time or another. That's as good as any. And it looks like hell to me. Look at those normal one-headed mothers out there. I guarantee you resentment drives 10 minutes on any street. And you got a legal resentment. And then you turn right around, and in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells you that resentment, justifiable or otherwise, is a killer here. It goes on to say that resentment is the number one offender, not the bottle. So I got to learn something to do with these damn resentments. And I, you know, let go and let God, that sort of thing. And God just kind of sits there on his dead can, and nothing ever happens to me. Or else he's just gone. He's out of town. And so I have to learn some of the techniques and the mechanics about how to get rid of these resentments. And it's kind of boiled down to, in recent times for me, is I flat out refuse to waste my time on hating anything or anybody. Not that I don't get mad. Boy, I mean to tell you, on the freeways anyway, I'm pretty quick with my finger. And I'm heavy on the horn. I let them know it. I see no point in being somebody else's rug to be stepped on, damn it. But I get rid of it that way. The point is that I'm trying to get across to you is I get rid of it. I let them know it. And I had to learn how to do that, too. You don't do it on city streets. You do it on the freeway. you can be stopped at the next light, and you might be in a little trouble. That happened to one of our more spiritual members. He was sober about 19 years and did that and was yelling at some 6'10", 19-year-old, you know, got out of the car and pulled him out of his car and knocked him on his dead can. And he's laying there with all those years of spirituality and sobriety. Don't mean a damn thing, you know. He's telling this kid, you can't do that to me. Laying there. Well, you got to get rid of these damn things, or at least I do. I'd be damned if I'm going to carry them. I ain't going to waste my time anymore. I got to get rid of them because I can't carry them. It's death for the alcoholic, whether these are justifiable resentments or not. So you damn well better learn some of the techniques and the mechanics of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we can tell you, or the book can tell you in gory detail, how to get rid of these things. We also have another book back there, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Watch out for that. It's dangerous. You're liable to get struck sober. It's, that book really comes on. You read that damn thing and try to follow it, and they tell you right in there that it says in our big book even, that in the back of Dr. Bob's story, it says, if you want to quit drinking liquor for good and all and sincerely feel that you must have some help, it goes on to say, we know we have an answer for you. And that's proof enough to me that this damn thing works. One of the major factors in my sobriety today was when my sponsor read that to me. I didn't like the way he talked. He's dumber than hell. And being an intellectual, I picked him because I heard he had money, but, you know, he was dumb, basically, and had this money, and all I wanted to rub off on me was that money. First time I met him, he says, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to see him about every day, and he'd say, "How's your sobriety today, young man?" That did it. That's my kind of sponsor. I'm going to snow that bastard. Get some of that loot that I heard he had. Well, he still got it. And I never saw a dime, not a dime out of that man. But I found a lot of other things. He gave me this book that was underlined. I tore all those pages out of it. And so he got his own book out, and he would read to me. I'd say, "I can't stand the way you talk." And, "Well, let me read to you. If you don't believe me, maybe you'll believe this damn book." And so he would read out of Dr. Bob's story, which was his favorite, to me. And many times I would stop him, and I am known for my quick temper and quick tongue, quick with the words to cut people down. And I've said to him several times, "You old wet-brained bastard," and it never fazed this man at all. He has serenity that I still am not quite sure how he got, but he's got it. And he'd always stop, and he'd look me right in the eye, and he'd say, "Young man, preface that with sober, if you please," and go right on. Never faced me. This man, in the end, was the one who... He's a sign painter. And he'd leave signs on my door. big mothers like this for the neighbors to see. He was the one who helped cure me during my intellectual period. I came home, sign on my front door that said, "All the world loves a smart ass." Well, that cure didn't take. 1 week later, another sign. "Once a smart ass, always a smart ass." Then when I went through my religious period, no signs, and I began to get a little worried. He did it all with one sign. A big one, red letters, said, "Sam saves." This one wasn't on old plain cardboard like the others either. It was on wood. He took some time with this one. That's why I wasn't getting too many messages. I still have that sign today for obvious reasons. Just in case you get out in left field again, you know. I don't know how well cured some of you people are, but I still get out there in left field. And so I got to hang close to my sponsor. I don't get too far away from that man. I go see him fairly regular. As a matter of fact, when I go home tomorrow, I'm going to his house for Easter dinner. And he lives in a place that makes Tobacco Road look good. You know, he lives on, he calls it Upper Skid Row, but I think it's Lower Skid Row. That place is something else. They got about 8 or 9 dogs and cats and all kinds of animals and all kinds of kids. And he's sober about 16 years now, and this man is just something else. With those signs and with the way that he knew me for exactly what I was and said those things to me, I got to give the credit where it's due. Of course he didn't work those damn steps for me. I had to do it myself. Everybody has to do it for themselves, but I got to have a lot of help. I need those people around me that lay the truth on me, not the ones that pat me on the back. I look for those. Especially the ones that said, "So nice to see you young people coming in here before you have to go as far as I did." You know, some little old lady said that to me, and I thought, "Jesus, wonder where the hell she's been." I've been in jail, I've done all them other things. That broad's really been around. But I like to hear those things, you know, and I lied. Funny, when I got here, I buddied up to those kind of people, with one exception. One broad in Los Angeles would always come on with the same damn thing. She was very dramatic. She made Betty Davis look bad. And when she read chapter 5, you knew it, baby. You knew it. And when she pitched, she always talked about, well, when she died, she was going to the big meeting in the sky. And they were going to sit around that big coffee pot upstairs and talk to the big boy upstairs, and all I could think of was BS. If I die tomorrow, I'm going to the big liquor store in the sky. Or the big connection or something. You know, I can't stand all that stuff pouring out of her. But I lied and put on my Al-Anon smile and buddied up to her because I wanted to be among the in crowd of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything but work those damn steps. And then I made the mistake of asking this man to be my sponsor and another man to be my sponsor. I picked on finally three of them, but they all three had read this damn book, and so they knew me for what I was. You can't, BS somebody that's already done that for many years. They knew me for what I was, in other words, and they told me the truth. And these are the people that really have helped me the most. Not that I don't like compliments. Of course I do, but it can go to my head so quickly. I learned this at an AA meeting one time. I began to be what I thought was a circuit speaker, and I found myself bowing on the way to the podium one night to run off at the mouth, and then I discovered that this group applauded anything because somebody dropped an ashtray and they started to applaud, and I thought, well, watch out, it's really going to your head. My sponsor laid this truth on me, and he told me, Sam Beatty, you're full of crap. That's one of the very best things that I ever got out of that man, was just this truth right on me. And eventually, after going through all of these periods that I went through, things in recent years have begun to settle down for me, not necessarily into a rut, I hope. I hope I'm still alive, because I don't want to be just an aging vegetable, an aging animal that I was when I got here. My adolescence was rather long, of course, and I want my adulthood to be much longer. And I hope it's not settling down to where my name will become Senility Sam, although I dislike the name Serenity Sam, too. Those names were put on me because I never really had any serenity for many years. I was pretty wild, and Sam isn't my real name. There it is, now you know. I wasn't telling the truth to anybody, baby. I had that white shirt and that tie on, and I had to lie about it. My name is Bill, and so it's obviously not a nickname. It was a lie. I couldn't tell people the truth about me. If they learned about my family, if they learned about the things that I had done and was still doing, still wanting to do, they wouldn't want me as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I was fortunate enough to find these people who told me the truth. But they were still my friend. They helped me in so many ways, because I thought for a long time, long enough, that I was not an alcoholic. And one of my sponsors helped me there. He said, look, I'm going to help you make up your mind. I'm going to buy you a pint of whiskey, and I'm going to give you a dollar. And I want you to drink it and die, you bastard, because you're no good to anybody anyway, the way you are. And that'll help you decide. And I knew right then that I didn't want to take the chance with my sobriety that I had at the time, which was only about 2 or 3 months, that I wanted what I had, little as it was. The same way with the LSD. I was about 9 months sober when that happened to me. I had the chance to take it. And I wanted to hang on. I was so desperately afraid of losing what I had. And of course today, now I know what will happen if I go out there again. I've been here long enough now, over 11 years, to see people come and go. And of course some of them just don't come back. That swinging door hits them in the ass and that's it, baby. They just don't come back. Those non-alcoholics are dying out there, coming on with that kind of crap. And I believe in having a hell of a lot of fun, as I didn't come here just to sit around and be sober. The book tells you this. Damn it, that anyone that says that sobriety, the way it's worded in the book, anyone that says that sobriety is enough is an unthinking person, and I'll be damned if I want to be an unthinking person. I want to be alive. I want to live. I want to get out and go. I learned it from a little clown that I came up here with a couple of months ago. He talked here last October, November, along in there. A guy named Joe Motes. And that little bastard is 77 years old, if you're ready for that. He works 5 days a week, and he goes. That one is alive. He always has something to do. And so I learn from people like that. I try to emulate them. I try to copy what they do. They have the kind of sobriety that I want. And I want to be alive today and a member of the human race instead of that human race dropout that I was when I came here. And for a long time after I was here, it was always stop the world, I want to get off. And when that didn't work, stop the world and the rest of you, get off my land. If you're loaded enough, I believed it. I don't know what you guys believe. I hallucinated a lot. I tripped out many years ago. I didn't learn to trip out sober. You can be someplace else. I learned especially to do this in big meetings, and that's why I went to a lot of the larger groups in Los Angeles, so I could trip out, so I could be very anonymous. But it was at the smaller groups across that small table with these people laying the truth on me, and so much of it, of course, I overheard. I listened to people with a long time on the program talking to newcomers, and I overheard a lot of things that I needed to hear. And then I found I found myself mouthing these words. My sponsor once told me that. He says, "You go there and talk to that guy." He says, "I don't like him." He said, "Get over there and talk to this guy, because you're going to find yourself saying things that both of you need to hear." And then I went through, of course, a period where I had my sponsor up on a pedestal. He was walking on the water as far as I was concerned, and I was ready to take lessons from him. However, he worded it very simply for me. He said, "Sponsorship is the friendship of two people for the benefit of both of you. You don't have to make it into some big damn thing." And so today, I want this friendship as much as I ever did. I want to stir up this want within me to live. That's why I'm at a meeting tonight. Not necessarily to run off at the mouth. I'm here for that word called fellowship. I'm glad that this isn't some, society or something like that, or incorporated or some club. I'm glad that it's an honest-to-God fellowship. That word is to be taken literally here. I learned that from one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous in an article in The Grapevine, in which he said the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are rarely too hard for the person who really wants to stay sober, and they are to be taken literally. And most of the other words here, like fellowship, are to be taken literally. They are for real. And that's why I am still here today. Because if I had fat-ass sobriety, no thanks. I know how to trip out. I'll go back out there with some of those things. And death is preferable to the way I lived before I got here. I wanted to die. Hell, I had a stack of suicide notes bigger than that book over there. Long and drawn out with gory instructions on what I thought of God and what I thought he ought to do. And one of the last ones I wrote was boiled down to one sentence: "Dear God, you son of a bitch, see you in a few minutes, Sam." That's just the way I felt about it. And it's been that way since I've been here, too. It hasn't all been easier, all sweetness and light for me. I've had some rough times, and it's gotten down to, on some days, just don't drink. And by God, that's what I've done. Then on other days, I have made my peace with my Maker. I have made peace with my fellow man, and I am trying to follow, as it says in our 11th step, praying only for knowledge of His will for us. And on those days, things seem to work out. Another thing that I learned from my sponsor: I would come home from work screaming and yelling about those so-called normal people out there and having to work with them, and things didn't go my way, And he said, "That's what it boils down to. Things aren't going your way. Why don't you try to live with those people? Because you're going to have to. Where are you going to go? You're going to bury yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and never run around with anybody except members of Alcoholics Anonymous?" He said, "You'll never make it, because you're not going to find any place to work without bumping into those normal, one-headed people." And so I finally began to see that, they got as much right here as anybody else. And so I'm not going to hassle with them or think that we are a specialized group here. We're so much better than they are. We're so much more intellectual and a lot of other things. We have deeper insights, of course. We also have more defects of character, too, I hate to take a group inventory. In any case, I'm here tonight to keep that warmth stirred up within me and to recharge my batteries. I get a hell of a bang out of most meetings that I go to, because I like to go to meetings where the people are alive, they're living, they're getting out there and doing a lot of things that I always wanted to do. And by golly, I get out there and do them myself. Now, I went through a childish period not too long ago. I got back on a motorcycle at my age, and I wore a Batman sweatshirt again, and all kinds of goodies like that. I went into a grocery store, and standing in line, I learned to do that too. I don't know about you people, but I couldn't stand in lines, any kind of lines. I had to buy stamps out of a machine. You can kick that, but you don't dare kick the man. And there weren't any lines there, but I was standing in line in the grocery store, and some broad sees me in this Batman sweatshirt, and she says, "You're a little old for that, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, how do you know how old I am mentally?" And which is true. I've had a hell of a lot of growing up to do. At 29, the last 2 years of my drinking, I couldn't tie my own shoes. That ain't very hip. That ain't very adult either. And I couldn't do a lot of other things. The only mail I had ever received in the last 5 years of my drinking, I sent it all back, every damn bit of it. I marked it deceased and sent the whole thing back, every damn piece ever, including the ones marked occupant, everything went back. I didn't do any of the so-called normal things that people do. I could not do them. I lived with this fear of being found out, the fear of failing, and so I lived in a world of lies, fabrication and fantasy. Hell, I've been to Disneyland before it was ever started. And I think most alcoholics have. We trip out. We are always someplace else because we don't like it here. We got to live in the past or we got to live in the future because it's so much better than the here and now. We cannot stand it. And Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me and people like me to learn how to live in the here and now. And when I'm in a room like this where I know there are people who have been sober for quite some time, it's again another proof to me that this damn thing does work. And that to me is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous over and above, don't drink, is a way to go for drunks or people of an addictive nature, whatever the hell you want to call yourself, a way to go that works. Too much proof of it in this room or in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that you go to. I started to say with the exception of the Venice meeting, we do have some long-term sobriety people there, but our two oldest members are kind of a mess. The oldest one don't know how long he's been sober, and we don't know either. And he's been around a long time, so we just put a lot of candles on a cake every year and give it to him. The other one's been a member of our group for 18 years. He has yet to make a year. He just now passed 6 months. And this is the first time he's ever done that. His other track record was 5 months, and that was about 4 years ago. But he is at the meeting every damn week. If he ain't in jail, he's there. Drunk or sober, the bastard is there. We don't allow him to drink right in the meeting, of course. We're not quite that liberal yet. It used to be. When we first revived that group and called it the resentment group, we had one rule, and that was no smoking weed during the meeting. Anything else went. It was no traditions, every man for himself. And poor Brian, our group drunk, I learned the lesson there from my sponsor. I wanted to kick Brian out and keep him out of there. My sponsor says, if he is quiet, we're not going to kick him out. He's got as much right to be here as anybody else. The tradition talks about this desire to stop drinking is the only requirement for membership. And Brian, of course, is screaming and yelling, he's a member, by God, or else. And so, sober or drunk, we let him come to the damn meeting as long as he's quiet. He is hell on speakers sometimes. He cuts loose with a few choice words, you know. Not you long-winded bastard, get out of here, and things like that. One of our more spiritual members in Los Angeles came to our group to talk one time, and Brian was passed out by the time the coffee break rolled around, so we just let him lay there. You never know when he's going to get the message. That's what I learned from my sponsor. He says, you know, the bastard ain't dead yet, so just shut up. As long as he's breathing, he's a member. So the poor guy, he talked to Brian the whole evening, you know, bang. He's just talking. He couldn't take his eyes off of him. And it was a hell of a pitch, because it was to a real, genuine newcomer, you know. And Brian's been doing that for 18 years. The only part of the message he's got, really, is keep coming back. He does know that. But of course, we're at a point now where I told him a couple of years ago, if he ever got 6 months, we'd give him a year cake. Cause but we got to lie a little. What the hell with Brian? You know, he's kind of a track record of some kind. That poor guy is something else. So because he's always dying. It looks like it. He looks like hell, you know. And whenever I had other new people with me, I was kind of glad to see Brian, even if he was drinking, because I'd say, "You see that? You see that? That's previews of coming attractions. Go ahead, just take a drink, and you'll end up like that. You'll be just like that. You'll be a hell of a mess. Don't tell me what a panty waist drinker you are, you know, or you only have a slight problem with a bottle. Take a damn good look at somebody that thinks the same damn way that you do, and look at the mess that he is." So anybody can be an example if they want to, and I've learned that by golly, Brian's as much of a member as any of the rest of us. Then I'd better not get on that pedestal. I put myself up there, of course. You know, that's how we get on pedestals. And look down on another member of Alcoholics Anonymous and another member of the human race. I'd better watch, left field again and get out the sign, Sam Saves, or I reach that advanced stage of sobriety where I'm too damn good to make a 12-step call. I want only the ones out of Beverly Hills, you know. I don't like those lowlifes that throw up in your car or other goodies that they try. I had one a couple weeks ago that had convulsion in the back seat of my car, and all I could find to stick in his mouth was that 24-hour day book. So he got spiritual and physical well at the same time, didn't know it. But I damn well got to remember where the hell I come from. And so I still make 12-step calls. Why the hell not? And again, not to look down on anybody, because I just want to see a guy who's lost come in here and make this. The Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells you that this is probably the greatest thing that can happen to you after you are sober. Also, it's one of the very best ways to build up insurance against wanting to take that first drink and then reaching for it. I have been very lucky. I have never had that want to reach for that drink. And I firmly believe it's because I've learned enough of the techniques and the mechanics of Alcoholics Anonymous and then found the fellowship or the spirit that seems to be in these rooms on most nights. You can cut it with a knife, and that I have latched onto this thing and hung on to it, and I want to live and I want to stay sober. And what my sobriety boils down to tonight is the fact that I have made peace with my Maker and made peace with my fellow man, and that I can tell you that by God my name is Sam and I'm for real. I'm not that fake, phony mess that I used to be. Not that I still don't lie. They pop out of me just like that. I was in a meeting not too long ago where I looked like hell. I hadn't shaved for a couple days, and I'm riding motorcycles again and no shoes or socks on. And I walk into the meeting, and somebody says, "Jesus, you know, when did you get out?" And so I said, "Oh, I've been out about 3 weeks." Just like that. He just rolled out of me. And somebody once asked me about a year ago, "How long have you been sober?" I said, 18 months. And it just rolled out of me because I looked that bad. But I'm not ashamed of this sort of thing. I quickly, you know, the book tells you when you were wrong, promptly admitted it. Of course, I stretched promptly into 6 months a lot of times, or longer. I'm pretty good at that. But I'm not ashamed of being a human being who is subject to these things coming out like that. And it's just TS if it does. I'm just going to have to shape up and go tell these people that I have lied, that baby, I'm a phony. And one of the first pieces of honesty that I ever tried, I still remember it. I went to this man who got me a job playing the piano in the bar in Santa Monica, and I looked him right in the eye and I said, "I am not a musician." He looks me right in the eye and says, "So what else is new?" He didn't really care. He was more interested in me as a human being, and he told me so, and he invited me over to his house the next day. I expected rejection and a lot of hell, you know. He was really going to come on to me. But no, he knew that I was pretty sick and one hell of a mess, and he accepted me for what I was and did not try to sit in judgment of me. And this is what I have found with most of the other members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is why tonight I am damn well where I want to be. And there aren't too damn many human beings, really, that can say that. Most of the people I know, they want to be someplace else. You know, even my grandmother and aunts and uncles, they turn on that television and they're there. They're part of that. You know, even the ones that don't drink are just nutty in all hell. They're tripping out with that damn thing, letting somebody else do their living for them. A lot of my relatives have never been any further than 35 miles away from home. How does that grab you? It grabs me bad. I don't like it. I want to travel. I want to be part of the world and feel at home any place I go. And this is only possible because I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know whether I got to give the credit. Hell yes. And so I've gotten the lead out of my ass, and mentally and physically, and I've tried to work those damn steps. I'm not trying to let on to you that I got it made and I'll never take another drink. Hell no. Anybody that says that, according to the book, is a damn fool. And I don't care to be that either. I'm bad enough on my own without, picking up something like that and saying that I'll never take another drink. I have heard some people in Alcoholics Anonymous say that. And I don't care to reach that advanced stage of sobriety either. But I can learn from it. I can be grateful that I can look at myself as a weak, fallible human being who is making it today as a human being and a sober human being. And so tonight, anybody that's here can latch on to this. You run out of chances, baby. You run out of excuses. This is the place. It's here in these rooms. If you are of an addictive nature, I've seen too many people go someplace else, but the majority of people, of course, that I know have stayed here because here's where the best odds are. I'm nosier than all hell. I look into a lot of other things, a lot of so-called cures, and not a damn one of them comes up with anything that seems to work worth a damn. We have too many people who have been sober and they like it over a long period of time. This is where the best odds are. I'm not trying to tell you it's the only way, but I firmly believe it is the very best way if you're an alcoholic or whatever the hell you want to call yourself. Come in here and find this thing. And then once finding that the damn thing does work for you, you got to use it in your everyday life, learn how to keep it, and that is to share it with your fellow man. And what greater thing can you find than, contributing something to the human race instead of take, take, take. That's all I ever did. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I've had a rough life, a damn rough life. When I was a child, with my family carrying on the way they did, I saw a lot of shootings and knifings. My father drove my mother insane. When I was 8 years old, I have a younger sister who was 6 at the time. My mother tried to kill us with a knife. She was 7 months pregnant with twins. She took poison. She killed one of them. And it was a hell of a mess. We were taken away to relatives who didn't want us. And I know how to withdraw and become something else. And so that's why I was an animal when I got here, little more than that. And when I got here, my facade was on fire. And I was rotten to the core. There just wasn't anything. And so how could I be anything but a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous for having found life, for being able to get out and go someplace on my own and not being afraid to do it? I could not do it my first 2 or 3 years of sobriety. I could not drive a car. It took me 2 years to do that before I ever got a driver's license. I'd never had one in my whole life. I always had plenty of cars. Of course, it didn't belong to me, And I figured, why get a driver's license? What the hell is 90 days on a 1 to 10? I had good logic. In any case, how could I be anything but a grateful member of AA, for finding this wonderful thing that we have here, for have founding that dirty four-letter word, life, and have made it a part of me? And so it behooves me to get the lead out of my can and make those 12-step calls and do those other things. We got it laid on us here tonight. You hear what the man said, you guys sitting around in your dead ass. So get out there to whatever this place is he wants you to go and do the bit. Why the hell not? The rewards to me, deep inside, which is where they really count, of course, have been something else. I met a couple of people here tonight that I knew from someplace else behind bars. And there's a lot of times I think, why the hell go? They're all trying to shut the parole board, and they don't give a damn, and all kinds of things like that. But when I see one of them in a meeting, just one, that's enough. That's all I really need. Just communication with one other party like that. I did that word communication. You hear a lot about it these days, that they're trying to, find out how to communicate better. We're all alienated. I think if they'd come to a few meetings, they'd see a hell of a lot of it. I think it's a wonderful thing for any human being to be able to say, and we've found it here tonight, it's very obvious in this room, we have communicated with each other and at a level that we can really feel. And this is, I got to feel it here. I can't just mouth it. Words don't mean a damn thing to me. I have to feel it deep inside. And so my sobriety is the most meaningful to me when I look in that mirror and it's not a son of a bitch staring back at me anymore like it used to be. It's somebody that I don't necessarily like all the time. But it's somebody who has hope another dirty four-letter word in my life. I find hope in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can and will make it today and that I will make it tomorrow. So come in here and give yourself the best break you ever had. Use this thing once finding that it works. Share it with your fellow man. And I hope to hell that I see as many of you as possible as we lurch along the murky road, a happy destiny, together. I dig that word, togetherness. It's one of the most important things that we have here. So see you someplace on the road. Thank you for listening.